Are you that one friend in the friend group that loves to treat yourself? It's okay. You can be the one to refuse making coffee at home because there's a fancy coffee shop downstairs. Or opting for the extra legroom, I've done it, on the plane because your vacation is starting now, not later. Or buying extra when that certain something's on sale because it's saving money. Well, if you're treating yourself to the top options in everything in life, then why settle when finding a doctor? It is your health, after all. Enter ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book tens of thousands of top-tier doctors, all with verified patient reviews. So don't settle. Go for the best and find the right doctor for you with ZocDoc. With ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and a website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. All the docs have verified reviews from actual real patients. You can filter it for those that take your insurance, those that are located near you, or treat specific conditions you're looking for. I found it incredibly easy to use, and you will too. Go to ZocDoc.com/beyond and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/beyond. ZocDoc.com/beyond. And welcome back to Beyond the To-Do List, a podcast about productivity. I'm Eric Fisher, your host, as we discuss the true goal of productivity, living a more meaningful life. This week, I'm excited to share with you a conversation I had with Adrienne Bellhumer. She is the author of the book, The 24-Hour Rule and Other Secrets for Smarter Organizations. And the topic this week is documentation. Yes, I know. Exciting, right? I know most of you, you heard the word documentation and your eyes rolled into the back of your head. But I gotta say, this is where a lot of the time suck or friction comes from that keeps us from being productive. Think about that for a minute. Anytime you waste going to try and find something that somebody else documented, or for that matter that you documented or documented poorly, comes back to bite you, and especially when it's somebody else's fault, right? So in this conversation, we're talking about the interconnection of information management and personal productivity. Adrienne's talking all about how there are three components that contribute to the art of documentation. Yes, it is an art. Yes, it is a skill. And why understanding those principles can take your organizational efficiency to a new level, but also your interconnected organizational efficiency to a new level. She also talks about The 24-Hour Rule, the name of her book, and we talk about what that means and why you want to do as much as you can with revisiting, reprocessing, or initiating action on information within a day to keep your momentum going. We're going to talk about all these things and much more, so let's not waste any more time and jump into this conversation with Adrienne Bellhumer. Well, this week, it is my privilege to welcome to the show Adrienne Bellhumer. Adrienne, welcome to Beyond the To-Do List.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you because I don't think we've touched on this topic specifically on this podcast before. You've got a book out called The 24-Hour Rule and Other Secrets for Smarter Organizations, including the 6 steps of dynamic documentation. And that last word is the key. Although for you, I think that the key word here is dynamic because
yes.
Documentation in and of itself, I think a lot of people would be like, oh, I don't want to do documentation because it can be a thankless job. And so thankfully for them, you've written this book. So I'm curious. I mean, you probably have heard from a lot of people when it comes to that thankless job part of it. What are some of the responses that led you then to say there's got to be a better way to do this and make, you know, smarter organizations happen and more prevalent, more ubiquitous?
Yeah, well, you hit right on the head. Just in business, we do it all the time. It holds processes, how we operate businesses together, but we have almost no strong reference. Like, we have very little guidance out there that's actually practical that any business can apply. So I always saw this as a gap in the training in our workforce. And I actually do believe documentation ties perfectly to productivity. The way I teach is not about sort of really stuffy corporate style of documentation. It's about doing the little everyday habits of documentation to make you, your team, and your organization more productive. I'm a chartered accountant, and I've worked as a business owner, as a consultant for many years, and it's been a skill and discipline that's sorely lacking in companies of all sizes. So I have seen this opportunity for a long time and been talking about it for many years too.
Yeah, you've been doing this for a long time, and I've heard you say that documentation is the intersection of information management, organizational design, and personal productivity. Now, obviously, I want to latch on to that last part, but pulling all three of those, and I'm also, again, a Venn diagram lover.
Okay.
Those three circles, I'm like, yes, the sweet spot right in the middle. How do those things, you know, information management, organizational design, and personal productivity, when it comes to documentation, like, how does that inform your definition of what documentation is?
Well, first of all, the definition of documentation, or when you say documentation in a company, a lawyer will think one thing, your accounting team will think another, your operations team will think one thing, your information management team is off doing something else. So part of what you just described, I call it the holy trinity of documentation, is really just giving that definition of what it really means. Is, first of all, information management is how we store. It's a big professional discipline, but it actually has everything to do with where we put things. And it can be just organizing the files on your computer. It can be an enterprise-wide content management system. Anything in between is the art of information management. And you need that for great documentation. You need to know where it goes and how you manage it. Secondly, organizational design is all about your process. Everything from business analysis to project management, even legal audit. We are process-oriented beings of organizations. That's how they run. And you need great documentation to support process. And process actually feeds into documentation as well. But the most neglected that we're talking about today is personal productivity. Documentation is actually deeply behavioral. If you want to lose weight, you can write down what you eat. I mean, it's like a very simple, we actually respond to writing things down. If we want to track what we're spending money on, we write things down. If we want to hone in on our thinking, we write things down. Documentation changes our behavior on a personal level. It changes how we behave in teams, and that actually escalates upwards. But that piece we don't talk about as much, especially in the corporate world or the business world, but it's actually the most important part, because we do document to change people's behavior, to make things better. And all three components have to be understood for great documentation, and really organizations to be successful is to kind of have to understand these three parts of what I call the Holy Trinity.
I think that that's a great analysis there. And I think that when you come to talking about that word document or documentation, all the different roles you named out, there's also just the average worker. I'm not HR, I'm not legal, I'm not accounting, I'm not this, I'm not that. Leave me alone and let me do my job. And when I need documentation, I will go grab it if it exists, but don't make me do it. You know, like, I'm trying to play that common man or common person worker role here. And I'm pulling from personal experience. It's like, you tell me to document something, I'm like, oh, so now you want me to write down every little thing I do and track me? Like, we've had a lot of backlash about in that regard. And in fact, this is probably a bed of weeds to get into, that the microscope was zoomed in on, especially during COVID time and remote work, when it's like, well, can I really trust that they're doing what they should be doing? And yet that's when we needed documentation the most in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. My book and my training is really about bringing skills to everyone. I think it's a huge skill in the workforce. I think it's a skill we don't hire for well, we don't train in ourselves, and you actually do carry it your whole life. Your ability to go to a meeting and, you know, take decent, now this is a very simple example, taking decent notes and then converting those notes into something of value. Maybe it's improvements for the organization. Maybe it's a new project. Maybe it's a new sales opportunity. That's actually what documentation is about. It's about taking something that isn't tangible and making it tangible and making it actionable. So I'm actually a firm believer that documentation is not just for your lawyers, your accountants, your documentation experts, your business analysts. It's for everyone to grasp the skills of getting information onto paper. Getting information out of your head is actually extremely powerful. A lot of people, I think, have great ideas. we have a talented workforce. We have highly educated people. We have access to incredible information. But if we don't have mechanisms of taking that information out of your head, getting on paper and doing something with it, then we're not really maximizing the value out of our people. So that's a great point about everyone. I am a huge believer that documentation is really for everyone. And my training, I've given it to administrative staff, to CEOs, to business owners. There isn't one group that doesn't need it at all, or that doesn't benefit from some reminders of best practices in this area.
People that are listening to this can remember that I've made reference to Ted Lasso a number of times. And one of the things that is said in there is this whole phrase of be a goldfish, because goldfish, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's like is a 13 second or 12 second memory. And it feels like we have that sometimes. A short-term memory is fairly weak. And I think it can be a benefit as it is portrayed in that TV show. It's like, hey, you're lost. You have it for 13 seconds and then you move on. But that can come back and bite you too. And I think that's what you're saying is like one of the best things you can do is take notes, but not just notes, because notes is just bare bones minimum of what documentation is. And there's so many different types of documentation. We probably should list off some of those. There's a bunch of different variants when it comes to that. But yeah, the short-term memory is so weak, especially sometimes for people with ADHD or symptomatic of ADHD because they are on their phone too much and they've trained their attention span to be just so much less useful.
Yeah. So, I mean, the title of the book is the 24-hour rule. And the 24-hour rule is that you have to rewrite, reprocess information in 24 hours or even rethink it too. In simpler terms, it just means do something with information in 24 hours. And it is actually, you know, slightly controversial message in today's run and gun environment where we're running back to back to back to back meetings. To actually take time to process what we heard, what ideas we had, what opportunities came into our day is actually sometimes not a popular topic to talk about. But when we talk about productivity, like I'm a productivity junkie myself. There's so much good productivity advice. But one piece of advice that I think, you know, my idea of the 24-hour rule is that we have to activate information in the right amount of time. Or the information actually loses its value and our short-term memory declines, or even we're not as energetically connected to information in 24 hours. I mean, the biggest example of this is meetings in the corporate world. It can be meetings. I mean, you can be a small business owner and still do a lot of meetings. So my small business clients get it immediately. But we're often in a scenario where we're going to meetings. We get great ideas, great information comes out. And we don't really activate that. We just kind of go off to 10 more meetings as opposed to actually do something with that information. Of course, there's huge debate now about recording everything in ChatGPT to get things on paper. But I still actually don't think it replaces just taking action on information because we are very connected to information the last 24 hours. That's why we will think about last night's hockey game or we'll think about last night's Netflix special because we actually are good in that window. So it is my little tip to add into the mix of productivity. Productivity isn't just about managing your schedule. It's actually about being really accountable for information and opportunity that comes into your day. And I do think it has a ripple effect in many areas of business and your life, especially if you're in information. We have a lot of information workers nowadays, managing relationships, managing sales, you know, projects, all these things where that ability to activate information is very important.
Yeah. And I think some people would think, oh, when you say that I need to act on this information in 24 hours, they feel like you mean one thing when you really mean another. In other words, they think you mean, oh, I need to do all the action steps that came out of that. Let's use the meeting, for example. They think you mean, oh, I need to do all my action steps that come out of that meeting within 24 hours. When what you really mean is process and park that information that came out of that meeting in the next 24 hours before you can't remember what it was those notes even meant or what to do or where to park them or fresh questions that would have come up and you can quickly email or text or, you know, Slack, whatever. People that were in that meeting to lean in on the momentum within 24 hours versus 48 hours, 72 hours, the momentum's basically gone.
That's a great point, of course. And I do get some kind of negative. What do you mean? We don't have time to process everything in that time. And I agree. I have days of the week where I'm in way more meetings than others. I mean, a very simple trick after a meeting is to take like a 3-bullet recap. It might not be exactly what you wrote down, but sometimes it's even the stuff that wasn't said that is more critical, or the thing that you think, geez, I just, you know, if I go to a sales meeting, sometimes it's something they didn't say. That's an example of processing information. And it's an example of stuff you really can't, you know, all the recording and tools can't totally replace. Your ability to think about what you heard and what it means to you is often lacking in our business and corporate world, where we're so obsessed with running to more and more meetings, more and more courses, more and more conferences, as opposed to actually processing what we did. That's where I see a lot of loss of productivity, is not really taking advantage of all those opportunities that came into your day, all that good information and what you could have done. That is a good point. It's not meant to be overwhelming, but sometimes even simple habits, as you know, in productivity can go a long way to accelerating productivity in many areas of your life and business.
I think some people would say, we need less meetings then. I would say halfway true. Yes, we need less meetings, but really we need less bad meetings, right? It's meetings that are not productive. In other words, there's information happening, but it's, you know, anyway, we won't go into that. That's a whole other podcast episode.
That's another podcast. And a lot of people, I could talk about that. I mean, I think one thing I will say, if you are going back to back to back meetings and you don't really have any information to process, you don't really have anything to write down, you don't have someone to add to your, and when I say notes, I have a very broad, sometimes I just add a note to my CRM, or I have an idea that came out of it. It doesn't have to be like a long set of like consulting notes, although we do that. But if you're going to tons of meetings and you don't really have an action, that's probably an indication of not great meetings.
Yeah, that's true. If you're coming out and you don't have action items, it's like, well, why was I even there, right?
Yeah, one or two meetings, that might be okay. But if that is, if you say, well, I don't really need to do the 20, I don't need the action, I don't have any ideas, that's an indication something is off.
If you enjoy Beyond the To-Do List, I invite you to check out Best Laid Plans. I'm Sarah Hart Unger, the host of Best Laid Plans, a podcast devoted to all things planning and planning adjacent. I talk about everything from paper planner reviews to deep dives into all things productivity, from keeping track of goals and tasks to fitting in your true priorities and reducing the stress around planning and organizing across different areas of life. I am a practicing physician and mother of three, so I have a lot going on in my own life and am intimately familiar with the time constraints that impact us all. And I love sharing my own productivity strategies and learning from others who have their own ideas to share. I invite you to check out Best Laid Plans, available on all podcast platforms, or visit my website, theshoebox.com, theshubox.com, to learn more.
I think some people would say, well, okay, my culture at insert organization here doesn't necessarily allow me the agency, which I would say, okay, you always have more agency than you think. But yes, sometimes it can be frustrating that you maybe don't have as much as you want. Again, that's another whole podcast episode, you know, specified to that. But I would say you do have the ability to block off on your calendar moments of even 5, 10, 15 minutes buffer time in between, if you feel like you've got tons of meetings, where you can then say, okay, I'm going to go and review, you know, whether it was a Zoom call, catch-all term for video conferencing, that you had a dictation thing in there that was recording it and then, you know, gives you a summary. You need to go over that summary, or you need to have, while you're sitting here, some people don't like this, but I mean, I've got a mini legal pad sitting here on my desk where I can write down quick little scratch notes that, you know, people aren't watching and it's not making a really loud typing noise, distracting, or it doesn't look like I'm typing so that people don't think I'm actually here and engaged and present with the meeting. But in other words, that buffer time, you can create those buffer times. And if you can't do it in between the meetings, then you're going to have to do an admin chunk, you know, front or back end or both of the, you know, day, or front and back end of the morning or the afternoon or whatever your workday looks like. I'm very flexible here, but you have to create those pockets of time to do this processing, like you said.
And you know what? Most days you don't feel like doing it.
No, you don't.
And it's the days where you've been in the most meetings and you've collected information from clients, and you'll have to like go, you know, at night or in the morning to process it. I wouldn't say it's always enjoyable, but it is a habit that that once you develop it, it becomes second nature and you understand the limitations of the short-term memory and you very upfront about it and you'll actually be more productive as opposed to just kind of, most of us actually deny the goldfish syndrome. There's lots of research. Goldfish is a great example. They do think the iPhone is one of the reasons why our attention span has dropped dramatically. And there's the forgetting curve as well. But we really do, our recollection does decline dramatically between 24 and 48 hours. There's actually a scientific reason for why you want to process information just to be more productive, actually.
Are there any tips that you are aware of for during a conversation or a meeting where we can be documenting as we go or passing that baton to our future self? So it's less of a, okay, let me reorient back to what was happening in that conversation or what they told me. Are there any processes for in that real-time processing? Let's call it that.
So that's actually interesting. Actually, the way you take notes and process information is actually aligned with our attention span. So our attention span, first of all, the first mode is called the spotlight. So if I go into a crowded schoolyard and I'm looking for my one child in 100, my brain is actually really good at finding my child, even though there's like 100 kids there. And that's how the brain works. So if you're going into a meeting and you have specific things you're looking for, you can literally train your brain to look for those things. And most of us do this very naturally. I'm an accountant. We work with accountants. They go to meetings and they'll tell me, hey, I'm thinking of accounting impact. Lawyers will sit and they'll think of legal impact. If I'm going to a sales meeting, I'm thinking about how to make the sale. If I'm going to a client meeting where I'm trying to solve a problem, we do this very naturally. I'm going to give a very low-tech way. I do think you should recognize this is one mode. When you are conscious of what you're looking for, we actually will hone in and we'll take notes, but we actually document better and we will focus our attention span. The second mode of the human attention span is called the floodlight. And that's where our brain is actually quite broad. It also is how we take notes. Sometimes we do go into, maybe you have guests on and you don't really know, maybe it's a little more fluid and you're going to have a broader conversation as opposed to a guest that you might go in with. That's an example. You might go to a seminar. In my case, sometimes I have new clients. I need to sit there with kind of a broad and open mind what they're going to say. Or you're learning something new. So in general, we use that less as we progress in our career. But nonetheless, that's actually kind of how we take notes. You can almost call it like a modified stream of talking kind of style of notes. And it's actually very effective at wording more faster, just even minimal notes as people talk. The third mode of the attention span is called the juggler. And we juggle between tasks. And you could even use that to write your to-do list out. I know it's called beyond the to-do list. When your mind is in that juggler mode, this is a very low-tech way of answering. But actually, when you're documenting or writing notes for yourself personally to get productive, how your attention is working will help to ring fence and really channeling into that attention span does help to have better notes and better focus at the same time.
That makes sense. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. You know, spotlight, floodlight, and juggler. And we do all those at different times because at different times we need to use those. In other words, we don't always need the high beams. And in fact, when people have them on and they're going past us, we wish they weren't.
We put them on a lot. But yeah, we do shift between those modes. Yes,
exactly. And we have others around us shifting as well. So it's kind of, you know, it's a collaborative effort, if you will. In fact, actually, this makes me think of a friend of mine who is a college professor. He was talking about how this wouldn't have been something that would have been possible in our day as classmates, but that he's seen older students, graduate type students, but they would be in his class and he would find out about this later, where they were all in the same Google Doc and they all had different roles. One was to just type down any and everything they could think of. Another was coming through and like spell checking.
Oh,
and,
my goodness.
Or a bullet list, you know, taking a paragraph and then making it a bullet list underneath. Another was taking that and creating some sort of visual aid that would go with it. Another was going and grabbing related links and dropping them in. So they were all going through and it was this living, breathing Google Doc that was happening while a lecture was happening. Now, it's a little bit different scenario, but at the same time, it's kind of like that. It's everybody pick and choose your role that you're strong in, and then we all come out ahead at the end with this document that we can all get so much more out of, and it's richer and it's deeper.
That's a fascinating example. It's certainly not how I was trained in school. I mean, we were bringing in much more group training, but it's going to go to a different level. I mean, I believe in, like, I call it skill stacking in documentation. There's a lot of skills that go into great document. Some people are great writers. Some people can capture information well. Some people are great with visual design. Some people know how to organize really well. So there's actually quite a few different skills that you stack together. And that's a neat example of how content can come together, even in a class, from stacking these different skills. But that actually should be thought of. Another piece of the documentation puzzle is understanding those skills, building them in yourself and building them in your team or organization as well. So very cool example.
Yeah. Yeah. What I really like about it is that it kind of does exemplify that whole, hey, we are processing this. I mean, in fact, that's what you want to do is you want to be, I mean, again, if we're going to go with the classroom versus a meeting, in some ways the dynamics are different and yet the same. We're meeting because collaborative effort, we're meeting for a reason. Otherwise, we'd all be off doing our own siloed thing. But the emphasis is on we're all together, so let's do the best that we can. Now, in a lecture, that's one thing. In a meeting, it's collaborative, or at least you hope it is, because no one wants to sit in a meeting where it's just one person talking at everyone. That's the whole phrase of this meeting could have been an email. So in that lecture, though, it's like that is one of the ways to process is to tap into one of those roles, even if you don't have all those roles, or if you have some of the skills. Let's go with what your skill stacking definition is, and let's just go with that and say if you have one of the skills or two or three of the skills, stack those and use those in the moment and process to a certain extent or make it easier for yourself to process when you're outside of that communal experience.
Yeah, documentation is an iterative process. I have lots of techniques. I use a technique I call pass when ready, but not too ready for documents. It means you pass something over and maybe this is a little less live. That's very ambitious of students to be as live because I tend to have to like think and process a little bit after I hear something to really get the best thinking down. But yeah, I mean, the technique I call pass when ready, but not too ready means you give it to someone to look at when it's good enough for them to give you input, but not too perfect because that'll stall your process. So it's a technique that I use to break perfectionism, but also you want something at the right level for feedback. And yeah, certainly with my team, we're constantly going to each other for feedback and collaboration. We're never waiting till the end. So it's always becomes living and breathing for the long or the duration of the project and even beyond that.
Okay. How do you decide though? This is where some people they're thinking, okay, but for me, I would always lean way too into the pass when ready. They'd be like, oh, it's not too ready. I got way more to do on this. I don't want anyone to see this yet. Like that window, that threshold, that percent of doneness, so to speak, is going to be different for different people. How do you decide when it's okay, it's ready enough, but not too ready?
Well, I have a lot of people that work with me on clients. And if it's good enough that I can see their initial thinking, then I'll look at it. You know, not a nice term, but I say, you know, puke it out. But it's true. Sometimes we cannot start the process of understanding what's in people's heads and what they're thinking unless I see it on paper. I mean, meetings are just so inefficient. So I do like to see things a little bit raw. I actually think the corporate world, that does stall them. This idea that everything has to be gorgeous before it gets passed for review is not good on productivity in general because things stall for a very long time. So my personal belief, I'd be on one side of the scale where as long as I can understand the thinking and see where it's going, I'm good enough to look at it. Doesn't mean I could say, yeah, that's great. I love these 4 points, but I think these two, we need to rethink where we're going. I work with an editor as well to get content out. And I can give some very rudimentary ideas to just test the waters. Does this sound right? I'm actually a believer in pretty early review to give you a little bit of validation of where you're going. Productivity is so broad, but one of the big killers of productivity is when we stall and start overthinking. So if you can get things on paper good enough for people to weigh in, obviously these are trusted parties that you work with. And I actually think that's a sign of a good team where you can show them something rough and they can weigh in. It sets you in the right direction. That's my approach. I would say I'm almost a little different than like, you know, sort of the traditional consulting firms with people, juniors typically hand things in when they're gorgeous. That's not how I operate. I think you lose a lot of efficiency in trying to wait for someone to hand you something fabulous. I will look at things a little bit earlier, probably than my competition.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're kind of hinting at something that I think is really cool here, which is maybe you have somebody that is your most trusted and able to see the most, like, okay, it's really raw, but it's only this person that's going to see it. And if they can even get a glimpse of what I'm trying to get at here, and they can point, yes, hey, don't forget this, this, and this, or I don't get it. Like, they're the first trusted, like, one circle out from yourself person before anybody beyond that would see it.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk forever about team productivity and all these other lovely things. I actually think when you have a productivity buddy, or you have, it's funny, and even the way my business is structured, I have a lot of people who I do individual work with, but those trusted relationships where you're bouncing information back and forth in the right cadence, it's extremely powerful. You can go a long way with having one or two people where you get momentum off each other from that feedback loop. We're going a bit of a different direction than pure documentation we're talking about. It's very much linked to the same idea of generating. Yes. Yeah.
Well, okay. So one of the other things that is in the title of the book, we've talked about 24-hour rule. We've talked about a lot of ways that organizations can and should be smarter. But also, you say, including the 6 steps of dynamic documentation. Again, let's give a quick definition of what dynamic especially means in that. And let's talk a little bit about those 6 steps.
Sure. So dynamic. So documentation has traditionally been looked at as, like, you know, piles of paper over there, or data in a database that no one's looking at, or stacks of files in a drawer or something like that. But when documentation is done properly, it is the opposite of static. It's dynamic. It moves you forward. If you write call mom on your to-do list, are you more likely to do it? Yes, you are. You're more likely to do something you write down. The best documentation, whether it's for you as an individual, even going to to-do lists or you know, simple, very basic things like journaling, to-do lists, writing down your ideas, simply on a personal level and on a big corporate level, the best documentation is documentation that drives companies forward. I mean, having a strong CRM system that's practical will drive sales. Having strong change management practice will drive better change. Having the right content will drive, like, it's such a simple, you know, Marie Kondo has, you know, keep clothes that bring you joy. Okay. That's kind of an interesting one. Is you document to drive you forward. So it's a different way of thinking. We get a little caught up in making documentation all about compliance and legal accounting that we forget actually the reason we're doing it in the first place. So that's the first part of my answer. It's the simple metric to whether your documentation is good is if it moves you to a forward state. And the 6 steps of documentation, you can think about this as a way of solving a problem, or actually a way of building your skills in documentation. And the first step is capturing. And capturing, we've talked a bit about the 24-hour rule, taking notes. We didn't really talk much about getting information out of your head, but there's, you know, even there are a lot of low-tech ways to capture information that we can do every day. You can't really do great documentation until you have good skills of getting things on paper in whatever way, paper or digital form. Paper was just a metaphor there. Number 2 is structuring information. Once we have it, we have to do something with it. That can be as basic as taking notes and moving them into, like, a document format, but, you know, it can be much more complicated, moving lots of different stuff around. Number 3 is presenting. And presenting is about, I teach some great tips in dynamic writing, which is kind of a hybrid of writing that I steal from a lot of different styles, and also strong visuals. Your documentation, it needs to be well-written, and it needs strong visuals to be effective and to be dynamic. Number 4 is communicating. So again, even that technique we were talking about pass when ready, not ready, you know, that's one small example of communicating. Communicating can be how you report out, how you make documentation a living, breathing exercise and not just a shelf exercise. Number 5 is store and leverage, which is sort of like our information management bucket. It's how you store, where you eat some basic rules in how you store it. There are best practices. This is a huge discipline of information management is huge, but I've tried to simplify it because not everyone needs to be an information management expert, but every knowledge worker does need some basics in how to store information. It's kind of also an area of the workforce we're not well trained in, but there's some really simple things that you can do to up your skills. And the last one is lead and innovate. And that's kind of like the bonus step. And I do think documentation is a subtle but powerful form of leadership. I talk about getting rid of groundhogs. Groundhogs are conversations that you have over and over and over again in organizations. And to use documentation to stop these groundhog discussions is a small act of leadership. Documentation has more power than you think. I mean, the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Labor in the U.S. government, as for example, a large part of their portfolio is documentation. There's enormous power actually even in politics and business that is in documentation that we don't think about on a daily basis, but it's absolutely there.
This is a wealth of information. Those six steps alone are worth grabbing the book for. I think one of the things that's key here, I mean, we could spend in a whole other separate episode just on, well, actually we could probably do a single episode on every single one of those six steps, couldn't we? But we won't. Maybe that's bonus sometime in the future. I think for me that the key here is documentation. It is the process of documenting, but it's also having all those documents and those processes, those workflows all in one place, or not all in one place, in the right place is the better way to say that. Sorry. But not only having those the right information in the right place, but knowing how to find it, look for it, grab it, access it, share it with the right people. I mean, there's so much more here. And I think the key here is that because information is so easily created and or generated either by us or someone else and just all thrown up into, let's use the phrase, the cloud. That is why what you've got here in this book is so important, not just for, again, you call out secrets for smarter organizations, but it's smarter organization of yourself as a one person organization, the personal productivity side of things. So I'm really glad to see that you've created this book. Even if it's not your full intention of going and drilling down into the individual as much, it's definitely a cumulative and an individual. It's a micro and a macro thing.
I also call it the little D and big D documentation. And it also helps to frame what we talk about. We talk a lot about big D initiatives in companies like information management, policies, big content systems, legal process, all this, I would say this big D corporate stuff, but documentation is only as good as your little D. And little D is these little everyday habits, like how you take notes, the skills your team has to write, how they share information, how they communicate, how they get information out of your head. That actually is what will lead to the success in the big D. You know, very simple example, you can implement best sales system in the world. But if your sales team doesn't have habits of writing down sales calls and opportunity, your sales system will flop miserably. And this is an example I've seen many times in organizations. So I'm a huge believer you have to actually balance both. It's not talking about corporate versus personal. The two are deeply connected. And the more we see that connection, the more successful we are in both.
I love that you are not making a distinction per se between those two and that they're incredibly interconnected. So that's great. I would love to point people where they can find out more about what you're doing at your organization, as well as grab more information about the book and dive deeper into this.
That's great. So my website, I have two websites, but I have bellhumorco.com and I have my compliance business is called riskoversight.ca as well. I love connecting with people on LinkedIn. So please, I hope they can add me. The book is available everywhere. It's on Penguin Random House, on Amazon, every major. I can list many others. So you should be able to find that easily. If anyone wants to reach out to discuss documentation, I have a nerdy habit of loving talking about that. And I speak at a lot of organizations and love discussing it with people or helping them out with any documentation challenges that they're facing.
That's awesome. Adrian, thank you so much for being here. It's been great talking with you and great to get your perspective and your expertise.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed being here.
Well, that's another podcast crossed off your listening to-do list. I hope that you took good notes. I hope that you practiced good documentation while you were listening to this episode. I know that the word, again, documentation, comes across as a boring must-have, must-do in an organization or with your own stuff. But trust me, the amount of time where you're trying to decipher what it is even you meant or somebody else meant in terms of properly documenting something, or trying to, in the first place, find where the crap you put it or somebody else put it. Oh, it's supposed to be in that folder. No, it's in this Google Drive. Oh, no, it's they shared it here, etc. All of that stuff is such a time suck and a slowdown. And honestly, that's busy work. It's not proper, true, meaningful work. So I hope that you found this episode helpful. If you did, would you do me the favor and do somebody else the favor? Share this episode. Share it out on social. Share it directly to somebody. Hit the share button wherever you're listening to this, your podcast player, app of choice. Or you can head on over to the show notes at beyondthetodolist.com. That's where you will also find a list of tools that I use to make this show, many of them with discounts for you to use. And they're not all podcasting tools, so some of them you're going to find to be really good productivity tools for you. Thank you so much for sharing this episode. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next episode.